We're going to continue with Harry S. Dent Jr., his book Zero Hour, and also take your calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM, so get ready. And welcome back to Coast, Harry S. Dent Jr. with us, of course. We'll get to your calls this hour as well. Fast show. It keeps buzzing by, Harry. What do you think 2018 will look like for us, Harry?
You know, I think, George, it's the beginning of the reality that we can't sustain an economy on free money and something for nothing economics, which is now we're getting with this new tax cut. It's just more, oh, we're going to give free money back, like this won't cause greater government deficits in the future, which we're already running, by the way. We're running, you know, deficits in good times. What happens in bad times, like in 2008-9? So I think the reality is going to set in 2018, and we're going to see markets finally crash into 2019-2020. Our indicators show, and I have four really carefully crafted indicators over the last 30 years of my research that really matter for the economy and predict in the future, not the present, the future, and they all point down into early 2020, and they don't start to turn up until around 2023. So I think we got the worst ahead of us, and if you see that coming, it's your oyster.
Now, you're good. You're good at what you do, but there must be other people out there that are good and have these same indicators. So do you think that there might be six investment firms out there all saying what you're saying tonight, Harry?
Well, you know, there are people like Ray Dalio and other leading hedge fund managers that are saying, hey, this bubble is getting extended. But I'm telling you, they do not have our indicators. I don't know anybody that has our 46-year leading index for spending in developed countries or the urbanization indexes for every emerging country in the world. We have unique research because economists study symptoms. They don't study the fundamentals. We study the fundamentals. And that is what will tell you when all of a sudden, 2008 will be a downturn, or China will have a collapse or something. You cannot see that from the short-term indicators, the symptoms. We study the fundamentals, not the symptoms. And economists primarily study the symptoms, so I don't listen to them.
Harry, what's your thoughts on what's happening to bricks and mortar retail stores because of the internet, Amazon, and so many other companies that are selling their goods without having to worry about bricks and mortar? They've got warehouses, but that's about it.
Well, even Amazon is investing now in bricks and mortars, but it's true, bricks and mortar is slowing. I mean, I used to say
Sears is slowing.
There's so many things I wouldn't buy over the internet. I buy headphones over the internet now because the reviews from the people will tell me whether it's the right headphone for me. The only thing I won't buy over the internet is a high quality shirt or jacket because they.
Will you buy shoes over the internet?
I have bought shoes over the internet.
Yeah, me too.
I tell you, the internet is it's the bomb, and Amazon is the bomb of the bomb. That's why it's doing so well. And I remember there was a time 10 years ago where I said, you know, is Jeff Bezos crazy or is he a genius?
Well, we found that out, didn't we?
At the time, he was crazy. No, he's a genius.
He started off selling books, like your book.
Yeah.
And then from there, he just exploded. I mean, at some point, he got the idea, or somebody gave it to him, that said, you got this built-in mechanism to sell things. Sell everything. And off he went.
Well, you know it's like the Apple guy who, said,
Steve Jobs?
Everything's going to be in the palm of your hand. He saw that before anybody. And Jeff Bezos is saying, look, the internet's going to get so good and so high definition that I will be able to buy a shirt
Yeah,
on the internet. I can't do
absolutely.
that yet.
If you
But
don't need
again, I'm already
something,
buying headphones, and I would have never thought that was possible.
yeah, I mean, if you don't need something today, right now, you go on the internet. It shows up nice and packaged in a box. You know what I heard, though, today? That
With
there are,
free shipping.
well, listen to this, though, Harry. I have heard that there are people now who do nothing but drive through neighborhoods looking for boxes and packages on the porches of houses, and they steal them. It's a new business. Another service
I can
business
see
pops
that,
up.
yeah. I can see that.
Let's
I
go to
mean,
the let's go to the
but that's a
phones.
sign of progress.
That's progress. David's in Sherman Oaks, California. David, how bad's the smoke out your way?
Okay, great. Thank you so much, George. Good evening, Harry. I have a three-part question. Firstly, one, I heard a gentleman on this very show about 3 weeks ago suggesting that millennials would drive productivity versus the rest of the world in America, number one. Number two, the Fed is reducing their balance sheet by $10 billion right now per month and going to $30 billion. And number three, therefore, what should we do right now?
Oh, again, this is the thing about the millennials. Yes, they are going to be more productive. They're going to be more innovative. They have been, but they're not as big a wave as the baby boom was in the late 50s to 60s and 70s for social change and technological change and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and all this stuff. They're just not as big. And they are more conservative because they have grown up in an era where home prices don't go up. They go down half the time. Baby boomers never saw that.
No, and the millennials, by the way, they're about 18 to 34 years old in age.
And the other thing, they're only half in the workforce. They're not even in there fully yet. Their biggest impact will come into 2036. Their peak spending, again, this is something we can project with high predictability. And then there'll be a second wave of them born into 2007. And by the way, we predicted years ago that 2007 would be the height in births of the millennial generation. Those will peak around 2055, way out, but not any higher than the millennials in 2036. So we have a flat economy going forward with ups and downs, but it will never be a boom like we saw before. And yes, these people will be more innovative and stuff, but you know what? They're also more conservative, like the Bob Hope generation too back. And that every other generation is more progressive and then more conservative or more open to immigration and then not. Again, I just study cycles, and I tell you, if you study cycles, the future is pretty damn clear.
What about the balance sheet for the country, good or bad? Well, you just
That,
told us.
but because we have all these assets, stocks and real estate and commodities to a lesser degree, everything's overvalued. So our balance sheet, our assets are going to go down, and our liabilities have been doing nothing but growing. Debt in the United States has been growing at 2.64 times GDP for 30 years now. Our debt's been growing, and our assets will start to go down. This is not a good sign.
Next up, let's go to Sean, Lawrence, Kansas. Happens to be a first-time caller for us. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, Sean. Thank you.
I think Donald Trump is driving the country down.
Tell us why. Why do you think that?
Wait a minute. Who are you saying going to take the country down?
Donald Trump, he says. Let's find out why, and then I'll let you react, Harry. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, because, you know, like, he picked a war with China, and, you know, it just wasn't right.
Are we in an economic war with China, Harry?
Well, you know, China thinks they're winning this war, and I think they're going to lose it because they've overinvested in everything, overamped their economy on steroids, and we're going to come out a bit better. But we are at a war with China, and, you know, we should be honest about that. But I think we're going to come out on the winning side, not China. I think China's going to have the biggest bubble burst in all of history, and then they'll come back and regroup and learn from that. But a top-down government planning never works because governments are always going to promise more today and pay for it tomorrow. And China, I tell you, I could spend an hour on this. China has overbuilt everything.
Yeah, they have cities with no people there.
For decades, cities and empty condos and empty factories. This is the greatest BS economy in history. And I love it because I think China is going to prove that top-down doesn't work. And my whole revolution on this 250-year cycle I was talking about earlier is about even more bottoms-up people will drive our economy. Everyday entrepreneurs will drive our economy, not governments.
What about wars? Perfect. What about wars, Harry, driving the economy?
Wars, I hate to say it, George, wars are very challenging, and it makes innovation go up the roof.
You know, really?
We had the A-bomb and jet planes and all types of stuff come out of World War II. Wars are horrible. I hate them. But in history, they are part of the cycle on the downside that stimulates innovation and you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger sort of thing.
So it's a boon for the economy.
And wars are also always stimulative to the economy. You have to do all this stuff to fight the war, even though it doesn't go to the consumers, it does go to the economy. So wars are a very baffling, two-sided thing. But you know what? History needs all of this. You know, economists don't understand that the duality of democracy versus capitalism and boom and bust and inflation and deflation and wars and peace all play into the dynamics that cause us to grow. And again, I look at my own life. I have learned more from my mistakes than my successes. So wars and downturns are like that. You learn more from the downturns and the mistakes, and you grow from them. So anybody that thinks that you can have a life that is just perfect, like the Kennedys, and then, you know, everything's good, and you get a good education, and everything works in your favor. No, you're never going to grow. If that's the case, that's why economists don't understand our economy. We need the dynamics of boom and bust, inflation and deflation. And what I do is chart those things. I chart. I know how to...
Well, and you're accurate with those charts.
And accurate long-term.
Yeah.
Short-term, you know, something can always happen. And short-term, I use what I call accidental sort of things that you can predict with odds, not predictability. But long-term, I'm telling you, you know, we're going to have a downturn for many years. We're going to have another upturn, and then we're going to have an even bigger upturn beyond when I'm dead.
Will the downturn
I can predict
occur?
That today.
Will the downturn occur in Donald Trump's presidency?
Yes. I tell you, George, I told everybody, I don't care whether it's Hillary or Donald or whoever was running, I would not want to win in 2016 because
wow.
The worst of this is going to come in the next 4 years.
Well, that means...
I would want to run in 2020
yeah.
to be the FDR. Or
the new guy.
Save
the new woman.
The economy.
Let's go to Ben in Bakersfield, California. Go ahead, Ben.
Hey, first time caller for you guys, but George,
thanks,
love your
man.
Show. I've only been listening for about a couple months because I never knew you guys were on. But
well, I'm glad you found us.
So I got a question for Mr. Dent. I've been dealing with Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin for about 4 years now. When does he think this bubble is going to pop? I mean, I've only seen it go up. I've seen all these
gosh,
people say
I would take
pop.
Your profits now, Ben. But Harry, when do you think it's going to go?
I just did this for our subscribers, and I put Bitcoin versus the internet bubble, not the tech bubble in the late 90s, just the internet bubble that really only came in the last year and a half. And I would say we're nearing the top of this. Do I know how high it will go? No. 17,000, 20,000, but I think it's getting near the top. And, it's like any bubble. When you have had, if you've been in this for a couple of years, you've done very well. And you should take your profits or take them progressively. And the problem is the first sign that the bubble is over, unfortunately, is that it will go down 40% in a couple of months. And by then, you've lost most of your profits. So I'd say, look, if you're doing well, take some profits now. If it does a little better, take more profits. But I don't think this has much longer to go. I think Bitcoin 20,000 is probably a good top end limit. But it could be peaking today for all I know.
It peaked today and then it went back down and it's sinking on the Asian market today.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it could be peaking today. You just have to say, look, if I've made a great profit because I was lucky enough to get on this, don't look, a bit horse in the mouth,
Right.
Take your profits and yeah, it may go 10%, 20% higher, but what if it crashes 40% in a few months as it just crashed 20% in a day? That's the market you're dealing with. Don't think you're lucky. Don't think you're a smart trader. If you've been in this, take more of your gains progressively.
And go.
And get go, because this is going, when this ends, I'm telling you, this is going to be a 90% drop when it ends.
Will the greed factor get people sometimes? They stay in it too long because they think they can make more and more, and it crashes.
It always does. I mean, what bubbles do... And again, bubbles, I mean, the 1950s and 60s stock market was not a bubble market. The 80s and 90s and 2000 bubble, and increasingly, has been a bubble market. When markets go up longer and longer, the fallacy of human reasoning is if they see something, the longer it goes up, the more the faith they have in it. Say, oh, it's going to go up forever, like real estate since, World War II and stuff, or stocks. That's the wrong logic.
Yeah, it's true. Harry, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast, Harry Dent with us. We're going to take phone calls with him when we come back. 0 hour, next hour, talking about the afterlife with some great stories. So make sure you're part of the program as well. And welcome back, Harry Dent Jr. with us. His book, 0 Hour, available all over the place and his website, harrydent.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll get your final calls here. Harry, in your career, what would you say was your most accurate, biggest hit in predictions?
Okay, this is not the one I'm known for. I predicted in 1989 that Japan would see a 12 to 14-year major crash while the U.S. and Europe would see the greatest boom in history in the 1990s. And then the second one was, in the early 1990s, I predicted the Dow, when it was a 2,000 something, would go to 10,000 by 2000, and it went higher than that, and people thought I was nuts. So it's you can't make predictions like that by luck. You have to have something fundamental behind it, and those are my two greatest predictions. And now I'm predicting the Dow's going to go to 5,500 in the next few years. That is not something people want to hear.
But I got to tell you, if you're sitting on cash after it hits and goes down, you can make a fortune coming back up.
Yeah, you could buy every great company in America
and wait,
or around the world, for 20 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, that's a good way.
Why would you not like that? But, you know, and you know, it's like, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Anytime the market, the biggest mistake most people make, unlike Warren Buffett or the best investors, the longer they see a market go up, the more confidence they have in it. The smart money sees the more a market goes up, the more risk on the downside. That's the better way to look at it. We've had the greatest bull market in history, now extended by government policies of endless stimulus and free money. Man, you got to start taking your money off the table.
What did Japan do wrong when it collapsed?
You know, it didn't do anything wrong. It just had a bubble, a natural bubble like we've had. It had its baby boom 15 years before we did. That baby boom exaggerated all their real estate and stock markets, and it created a bubble, which naturally occurs. The difference is their bubble was not exaggerated by quantitative easing. They did the quantitative easing after the bubble burst, like we did. But they had their bubble, it burst, and it should have been a lesson to the rest of the world to say, look, here's what happens when fundamental trends go up. And when good trends are good, human nature will add to that speculation and positive trends. And then it will crash, and that's what happened in Japan. And now it's happening in the United States and Europe, and everybody's going like, gee whiz, why did this happen? It already happened. This was preordained. This is a piece of cake to predict this. I have the easiest job in the world, is to predict simple demographic and cyclical trends while nobody is looking at it. It's so simple. I don't even deserve much for this because it's so simple.
Are you predicting a war with North Korea?
No, because everybody knows this is a no-win situation, and Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un are two similar personalities. They're going to duke it out and threaten each other like two-year-olds,
and
they
nobody
are two-year-olds.
Wins.
Both of them are two-year-olds, but there's no way to win here. I don't expect this to be the biggest cause of the next downturn. I think Italy's collapse or Japan or China's collapse. But you know, if Kim Jong-un does send a few more missiles up, it may just
he's got to slow down.
The problem is not the nuclear thing with us. The problem is we have the biggest debt bubble and financial asset bubble in history. I've documented this in all my books. It's crystal clear. If you don't see this, you're just blind. It's crystal clear. It walks like a duck, quacks like a duck. This is going to collapse, as it has throughout history, and you just have to be protecting your gains.
Stocks go out, let me ask you this, Harry, and we'll go back to calls here to line it up for you. When stocks go down dramatically, does that mean the companies are at risk of going out of business or not?
Well, yeah, a lot of companies are, but the best companies do better than ever.
And do their stocks stay relatively strong, or do they go down too?
They all go down. General Motors went down 92% more than the stock market, the Dow, in 1929-32, but then came back and became the greatest company ever in history in the 50s and 60s. So the same thing. These Google companies and even these new Bitcoin companies are going to go down dramatically and then come back up stronger than ever. That's the way the markets work. They shake everything out. They go up, they get too crazy, they go down, they consolidate, a bunch of companies go under, the strongest survive, and they come back stronger than ever. That's what we offer our readers and subscribers. We understand how the economy works. Economists think, oh, everything's supposed to grow for 3-4% forever and never have a recession. Duh. I'm like, you douchebags, you don't understand anything.
Let's go to Andy in Norwalk, California. Hi, Andy. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show. And Mr. Dent, I agree with most of what you say. But from what I've heard and read, that you've been wrong on several of your predictions, just like one of the great hedge fund managers, the famous Mr. Jim Rickards. He was predicting a collapse a couple months ago, and he was off on his prediction. But overall, I believe that both of you are on track with what you are saying. Eventually, it's going to happen. But here's my real question. With the China situation, our economy is so intertwined with China. We really need them, and they need us, but they really need us more than we need them in all probability.
They need us more than you're right about that. Yeah.
Right. So if they collapse, in your opinion, if they have one of these inevitable bubbles burst, what's going to happen to the world economy? Because this is going to send a tremendous shockwave. And number two, North Korea is not going to give up their nuclear program. This is their ultimate bargaining chip. They have a nuclear test that's going to coincide most likely, according to experts, sometime between the birthday of Kim's father, which was January.
Yeah, it's coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah. It's December 17th, and the kid's having his birthday, the rocket boy, January 8th. And they say they like to coincide big events. And this next big event is another tested hydrogen bomb. We cannot sit by and let him build a 50, 100, or more rockets with nuclear tips, especially hydrogen bombs, which are much more powerful than regular conventional atomic. So what's your opinion on that? If we do go to war, God forbid, what's the effect? And if China's bubble bursts, and it's inevitable, it's going to happen sooner or later, how will this impact our economy? And thanks for the answer.
Okay, you asked me like 100 questions in one. I'll give you a few answers. Yes. North Korea knows their only strength as a small country is to have the option to have nuclear weapons to set off and say, oh, yeah, we're crazy enough to do this. Will they do it? No, they won't. They'd be dead in a second. It won't happen.
Unless they're suicidal, Harry. I mean, yeah. The guy's crazy.
Well, and if they're suicidal, it'll be over very quickly. So I'm not as worried about that as a global threat. I am worried about what the listener said was China is, and I'm saying this and I've said this in all my books for many years, China is the biggest bubble ever in modern history, bigger than our internet bubble or our technology.
Bigger
bubble.
Than 2008?
China has overbuilt everything so far and leveraged with debt. For an emerging country, which is not as credit worthy as a developed country, China has debt ratios similar to the United States where they don't have the incomes to support it. China is going to blow, and when it blows, it's going to be the biggest thing that's happened to the world.
Well, and their population restrictions, that's going to catch up with them.
Well, their workforce has already peaked. Their migration from rural to urban areas is already contracting because it's so expensive for these people. They're treated as second-class citizens, and the pollution is choking. China is still going to be the second or near first largest country for a long time, but they are going to have the biggest setback.
Oh boy.
For the next 10 years of any country.
So do they go to war?
If this doesn't happen, I pledge to quit my profession and become a limo driver in the Gold Coast of Australia. China's going to go down big time.
Will that mean a war? Will they go to war to boost that economy when it starts sagging?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think they're going to be able to afford to. And who would they go to war with? China's military is growing and substantial, but it's designed to police their own people. It's not designed to attack the United States. I'm telling you, there's nobody other than North Korea with their few missiles that couldn't hit a barn by the blind side.
So far.
So far. There's nobody that can attack the United States.
Let's go to Earl in Sacramento, California. Hi, Earl. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
Harry's been a big fan for a long time. I'm also a big fan of Carl Denninger.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Denninger's argued for the last 2 years that Amazon is actually an illegal business because they cost shift and they undermine antitrust laws and are intentionally putting other businesses out. So I want to get your opinion on that. And the only other question I had was, when we started printing money in the Greenspan era, I believe it was because we didn't have the organic growth. So when they stop, how are we going to get back to organic growth? Those are my questions.
Well, I'm going to address that first. That's the great question because, look, we have had organic growth from 1983 to 2007.
What is organic growth?
Generation.
Explain that here.
But what Greenspan did, and he was the first, and you're right about this, every time we have a little recession, he, like, lowers interest rates and pumps money in the economy. And, of course, when we had the Great Recession in 2008-09, governments around the world, central banks, just printed $12 trillion of money to cover over the reality. This is bullshit.
Can't say that, real. Harry. Harry?
What?
Can't say that on the air.
Oh, okay. This is BS. You can't cover up a crisis with free money and think it's going to go away. You're not curing the problem. Debts need to be worked off when there are excesses. Companies that overexpanded need to pull back. That's what happens in recessions. That's what happens in Chapter 11 bankruptcies in corporations. Governments are preventing this from happening, and it's not a good thing, and it's not going to end well.
What about
your question is the best.
And what about Amazon? Is it a illegal company?
No, I don't think it's illegal. I think Jeff Bezos, I used to think he's a crazy man.
He's not.
But now I'm thinking, he's very smart. He's a long-term thinker. He's like Japan that was competing with us in a lot of major industries in the 60s and 70s. And they're just saying, we're going to price lower than you, and we're going to wait you out until we beat you. And that's what Amazon's doing. Amazon is sacrificing short-term profits to gain long-term market share in more and more sectors of internet commerce. And you know what? They're succeeding. I tell you, 5 years ago, I would have said, would I buy headphones on the internet without listening to them? No way. No, their feedback on the quality of the headphones and anything, I can now pick out headphones. Now, I will still not pick out a business shirt, But you know what? With high definition coming down the road, maybe I'll do that.
Or a suit. I'd pick up a suit at you know, the men's warehouse or something. You know?
I think Amazon's the bomb. I think they are. Jeff Bezos, as crazy as he seems and looks, he defined his company as the as Amazon from the beginning. He said, we're going to take over the whole river. And he's doing it. And you know what? I like it. I have more things I can get from Amazon delivered in 1 or 2 days, and all the reviews and the quality checks. I tell you, it's a good thing.
It's simple indeed. Harry, thank you so much for being on the program. His latest book is called Zero Hour. When we come back in just a moment, Christy Robinette joins me. She's been on the program way before. But we're going to talk about messages from a wonderful afterlife and tales from the afterlife about stories of your animals on the other side. How about that?